I almost started to say this week's episode of Fated Mates is brought to you by, and then I realized we're recording.
No, we're not there yet. Fated Mates Live just happened.
It did.
It's very exciting. That recording will come out in May, everyone. So,
yes.
Get ready.
We are like at the point where we're like really like kind of like really fine tuning things. And it was funny because so Sunhee and I were in like having breakfast this morning before we got pedicures, and the Dua Lipa song came on from the Barbie soundtrack, and yeah. she was like, you need to play this at Fated Mates Live. So I was like, you're right, because there'll be like music playing while, mm-hmm. you know, we're waiting to get started. And I texted Sarah and Eric, and your response was, Eric just died a little.
Or something. Not really because funny. He doesn't like the Dua Lipa song, but because, well, you are talking to somebody who literally my CD book, listen, everybody, I know that just aged me, but my CD book growing up was like all soundtracks, because it was like, it was just the bangers from the movies I liked.
Yeah.
So do anyway.
Do you remember the brilliance of the like John Hughes soundtracks?
Yes, although you are older than me, and that is how we know. Because yeah,
that's true.
While I do know many of those songs, they are not DNA coded.
The Pretty in Pink soundtrack was like my life, everyone. My life. I had it on cassette.
There you go.
Sure.
I was very lucky in that I had a junker of a car when I was in high school, like a true junker, like you could see the floor through the passenger seat. This is the ground through the passenger seat floor, which, you know, whatever. And it had a tape deck in it.
Nice. Yeah.
Sure. And I actually almost died on a back road in Rhode Island, because I kept all my tapes in a shoebox on the floor of the passenger side of the car, probably covering up the hole. Through which you could see the ground, like the Flintstones. And I was listening to Blues Traveler on tape and like tearing down a back road. This is why parents should not let their children drive. And I was like, I'm not vibing with this. I'm going to change the tape. And I leaned over to get the box.
No, Sarah.
Came back up, and I was driving directly toward a mailbox.
Sure.
Which I hit, not like a blue mailbox, just a person's mailbox.
Yeah, yeah,
which right. Which I smashed into and barely avoided flying off a cliff into a quarry.
Well,
it was definitely, I could have died.
I would say my most dramatic. So I grew up in a place that was flat. So all of my
there were probably yes. quarries, though. I mean,
very flat, very flat. Ohio, northern
they
Ohio.
They don't mine in Ohio.
No, they okay. plant corn. And what I did was I like lived in one town, but went to a Catholic high school in the next town. And so we drove. And like, you know, you were kind of following kids who were also driving to school. Sure. And I was behind this kid. And I think about this now and I'm like, how am I alive? How are teenagers given the keys to cars?
It's really amazing.
And it was like, so there was like a corner coming up where it was like a really sharp corner kind of back. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know that angle, yeah. like a smaller angle. And yeah,
it's called just, something. I can't remember what.
An acute or right. Anyway,
yeah, like I switch back. Turn.
Instead, I drove through the cornfield to like cut off the corner and like bounce off into the road.
On purpose?
In front of the guy ahead of me to like beat him.
To be
They're
a jerk.
They're basically racing on the way to school.
Yeah, this is like Footloose. Like you were in the plot of Footloose.
Yes, exactly. And all I really remember is like it, just doing it, like having no thought.
Just being stupid, being
looking
really
behind
dumb.
Me in the rearview mirror and seeing this kid's like mouth hanging open, like what the fuck did this dumb bitch just do?
Well, yeah, you took out like an acre of corn, but you sure. did win, and that's what's
I did
important.
Win, and that's what's important. Scorpio season for me, all the time. All right, so anyway.
No, and that poor farmer was like, "What the fuck?" These, and he knew it. He was like, "These fucking
sure,
kids,
these fucking kids,
1,000%" And now, you are a middle school teacher. And you're getting your penance every day.
every day, everyone, every day. Although it is spring break, so not today.
Welcome everyone to Faded Mates. We don't always talk about bad driving. I'm Sarah McLean. I read romance novels and I write them.
And I'm Jennifer Prokop, a romance reader and editor and reckless driver.
I met a person the other day. I had a Zoom with somebody and I got on and I was, you know, looking like this. And she said, I'm a Faded Mates listener and this is amazing. And I was like, I'm Sarah McLean. I read romance novels and I write them. And she was like, yes!
Oh my God, amazing.
So hi, Morgan.
I love it. Okay, so this week, everybody, we are talking about like a real, like we're talking about Beauty and the Beast romance. It's like a classic for a reason and everyone loves it.
We're really like, I feel like we're really doing the job here on these interstitials recently. Himbos, Great Happily Ever Afters, Beauty and the Beast. What else should we be doing, you guys? What are the like big ones that we want to do?
I mean, and we have like a great list, and but like sometimes it's fun to just do these ones that are really like, oh, like primordial to the romance genre, even, right? Like Beauty and the Beast is, man. Whew. Did you love fairy tales? Did you love fairy tales when you were a kid, Sarah?
I loved this fairy tale.
Okay.
No, I didn't love. Here's the thing. Beauty and the Beast is one of the first fairy tales I think I interacted with where like the heroine wasn't asleep or like in a coma or like doing chores the whole time.
And was it the Disney version for you?
Yeah. I mean, I knew the story. When I was a kid, I had a book of fairy tales that had all of the kind of like, they were not the Disney versions. They were like the, you know, it wasn't Grimm's. It was like,
but it was like the 70s, 80s.
Yeah, it had like fairy tales, gold foil on the cover.
You know, I know the exact one I have. It's still in my classroom.
Oh,
and it says to Jenny from Mago, who is our babysitter. And it says the year I turned 5.
Adorable. And so here's the thing.
6 maybe.
Kids today don't have, like, I bought my daughter when she was like 5 or 6 a fairy tale book that is similar, the kind of compendium of it has them all. And she, I don't think, ever cracked it. Like, I think because there were so many other books. And it's it's not like picture books didn't exist. We're not that old. But, you know, it's a really different, it's different. Like, for, I feel like for us, like, getting an anthology. Felt like you were getting 10 books in one. So Beauty and the Beast, though, I feel like it's a real cornerstone text for readers, largely because of the Disney version.
Sure. But when I was making this library
of all of these books that I wanted to talk about, a lot of them predate, like historical romance has predated the Disney version of Beauty and the Beast.
Sure. What year was the Disney Beauty and the Beast?
I'm going to look it up, but it was definitely I want to say it was like 1993. Wouldn't that be a shocker?
I was going to say like early 90s, right?
1991, which makes sense that Lord of Scoundrels came out fairly quickly after. We know from our conversation with Loretta Chase that she loves movies and like she rewrote Mr. Impossible. She wrote Mr. Impossible as in dialogue with the mummy. Lord of Scoundrels is a flat-out Beauty and the Beast tale. We're not going to talk about Lord of Scoundrels except to say we love it and go listen to the deep dive. But Beauty and the Beast is a classic for a reason, right?
Sure. Right. I mean, it's... Well, and like you said, I think we all... I also liked it. Everyone's heard me say Rumpelstiltskin was my real favorite.
Me too.
But I liked... Like, right. Like, she was not a passive bystander, right? And I also think that there was a lot of like he was the one who was cursed.
And cursed for being an asshole.
Right. A flower will save you. Turn away from toxic masculinity. Could we make it any plainer?
But also, like, listen, in 1991, that movie came out. It was absolutely, I mean, it rewrote my like genetic code.
Oh yeah,
for sure. Because between like Belle going through that town, being considered weird because she always had her nose in a book, and right. then like being swept up into this fantasy like castle where everybody's nice to you. And also he has a library that ends all libraries, like the dream.
Oh, yeah. Completely amazing.
And there are so many. I feel like this is also if you like Google Beauty and the Beast romance retellings or whatever, it's like, you know, a scroll will unroll in front of you.
I think a lot of the books that are on those lists, because I did sort of like peek at those lists after I made my, like, first of all, this was not a difficult episode for me to prepare for in any way. No. I literally sat down, opened my notebook and wrote 12 books, one after another, after another, after another. Yeah. And then I was like, oh, let me go see like what I've forgotten. And there were some books that are on these lists for example, Judith Ivory's Beast is on a bunch of these lists. But fun fact, everyone, Judith Ivory's Beast is not a Beauty and the Beast retelling. Mm. There is nothing about Beauty and the Beast in that book. It is a retelling of Cupid and Psyche. And it is
great.
And you should all go read it. But don't believe it.
Well, sometimes people make gross assumptions based on titles.
I mean, he literally is, he sneaks, they're on a ship and he sneaks into her cabin to make her fall in love with him in the dark every night. Like, it's flat out Cupid and Psyche. Anyway,
I have a feeling you have quite a few historicals. I only have one historical. So I think we should start many.
So
why don't we start with historicals? Like, you just go and I'll just like jump in with my one. I mean, I know there are lots of them, but I figured you would handle that.
There are some that I think are classics, like in historical, when we talk about historicals that are Beauty and the Beast retellings, I think, so obviously Lord of Scoundrels, setting that one aside, because that's the obvious one that everybody thinks of. I'm going to start with Eloise James. This one's like low hanging fruit, right? Like, it feels like if you talk to anybody who's a romance reader, who's a historical romance reader, and say, name a Beauty and the Beast retelling, this is going to be one of them. When Beauty Tamed the Beast is part of Eloise's fairy tale series. She wrote, five books maybe that were each a retelling of one of the kind of classic fairy tales. So, you know, there's including like The Ugly Duckling, and it's a cute series. It's a very sweet series. So, but when Beauty Tamed the Beast is very cool because it is simultaneously a retelling of Beauty and the Beast and an homage to the television show House. So
fun.
House, if you were ever a House watcher, you know that House, the television show, is actually, House is based on, he's a Sherlock Holmes character. Mm-hmm. And he's, you know, the concept in is he's this like kind of like renegade doctor who can diagnose anything that other doctors can't diagnose. So like, you know, you think you have lupus. It's never lupus. That's like a running joke in the show. But, you know, you think you have, you know, whatever, it's, they test you for everything. It's none of those things. But you have all these weird combination of symptoms. He looks at them all and then boom, you have.
Right.
You know, whatever the thing is. Anyway, so I think Eloisa was watching. The story goes that Eloisa was watching a lot of House, and she got really into this character. And then she went down the research rabbit hole and found a real life Georgian era doctor who like was this kind of physician, where he was sort of gruff and had a terrible bedside manner, but could basically was sort of known to be saved, you know, saved everywhere, or could save anyone. And so she rewrote this idea with Piers, the Earl of Marchand, who is a, you know, incredibly skilled physician, like knows a lot about the human body and can diagnose basically anything and cure it. But who has, you know, I think one of the things that you can sort of love or not love about this particular retelling, this like vibe, Beauty and the Beast, is often the hero is scarred or harmed in some way, has kind of war wound, like has a war wound, has something that he feels he has to hide from the world, right? Mm-hmm. And so essentially this is deeply grumpy Sunshine, this book. He's like a hermit in a castle, wherever he is. And she is his, like, she's this, like, stunningly beautiful, bright, sunshiny heroine who is betrothed to him for reasons. Yeah. And then she heads out there sort of basically feeling like, I can make anybody fall in love with me. I've never had a problem doing that. Like, I'm the sunshiniest, most perfect heroine ever. She's a classic Eloisa James heroine. And she gets there and he's a grump and miserable. And she has to, like, basically pull the thorn from his paw, Jen.
Nice.
It also has what I believe, and I probably talked about this on the Grovel episode, but it has what I believe is, like, literally the greatest moment of a hero having to just, like, prostrate him. No, that's not right. Having to prostrate himself.
Amazing.
Like, to a heroine. And it is terrific. So that's Eloisa James's When Beauty Tamed the Beast.
Perfect. Okay, well, let me do my one historical, which is Where Dreams Begin by Lisa Kleypas. And this is a book, I don't know if you've ever had this experience of reading a book and then being like, oh, this is Beauty and the Beast, right? Yep. Which so this is not a book that I read because it was Beauty and the Beast. It was a book I read because I recognized it as Beauty and the Beast, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
And so what happened is, what happens in this book is Zachary Bronson is our hero. And he is like, he's kind of a proto Reese Winterbourne.
Aren't they all? You know,
he's lowbrow. Aren't they all? He's lowbrow. He's rich, but, you know, everyone thinks he's just, you know, they make fun of him because he doesn't have an aristocratic background or whatever. And so he's a former boxer turned businessman. So you will like that. And so basically he is looking for someone. I think if I'm remembering correctly, he has like a sister or something. And he's like, look, I'm rich. I'm going to put her out on the marriage mart, but she's going to need to like learn the way. And so he hires Holly Taylor, who is a young widow who has a small daughter named Rose. And basically, you know, he's like, well, you have to live here because, you know, because I'm the Beast. You have to live here. I don't know, romance reasons. And the here's the part that is funny, because I went back to see if my memory was correct, because sometimes you're like, I remember this, but is it true?
Mm-hmm.
The part that made me like kind of key into the fact that it was a Beauty and the Beast retelling is the description of his home. And it's got that like Derek Craven-esque thing, right? Where it's just like, you know, like it's just this like wedding cake of a house is essentially the way it's described. But in particular, I remembered that she comes in to this hallway and it has like blue silk, not wallpaper, whatever, blue silk walls with like butterflies like on it. And I just was like, oh, it's Beauty and the Beast. I don't even know like why I knew. Right? I just kind of like picture in my brain like the Beast holding that like all those butterflies flying or whatever. And so what happens between them is that he ends up just, of course, falling madly in love with her. And it's like all yearning and angst as it is. And, you know, so anyway, it's terrific. This one was published in 2000. So it's kind of, and it's, I think, a one-off. Like, I don't think this is part of a series. It's just like a literal standalone Beauty and the Beast retelling from Lisa, and it's great.
This week's episode of Fated Mates is brought to you by Megan Quinn, author of Bridesmaid for Hire. Okay, so our heroine Maggie is ready for a vacation. She has worked for basically years straight and not had a break because she's event planner and wedding planner. And I mean, weekends are packed and so is all the other time. So she's got a plan. She has bought a ticket. She's going to Bora Bora, which sounds lovely. I also would like to go there. And when she gets there, here's the problem. At the resort where she is the wedding of the century is being planned, and it's taking place. And even worse, one of the groomsmen at this wedding, Brody McFadden, happens to be her brother's best friend and her sworn enemy because they had a kind of makeout session that didn't end so great at her brother's wedding. Listen, so Maggie has sworn to stay away from him, but she gets this opportunity to maybe be able to be the event planner for the wedding of the century because of romance reasons, except in order to get it, she has to pretend to be Brody's girlfriend and a bridesmaid in the wedding. So shenanigans are the Meghan Quinn promise in this book. And I think that if you are into fake boyfriends, enemies to lovers, destination weddings, trapped on a Bora Bora island, making out with Brody's,
yeah, you can pre-order Bridesmaids for Hire right now, or it will be available with your monthly subscription to Kindle Unlimited. Thank you, as always, to Meghan Quinn for sponsoring this week's episode.
And if your podcast app supports it, you can click on the chapter title right now to be taken to pre-order the book, which is out April 2nd.
So I think we should talk about this whole, like, scar thing, because, as you know, I love a scar, which is probably why I love these books, right? Because often in historicals, there is literal, you know, the beastliness is a literal mark. And obviously, like, this is not, there's something kind of vaguely problematic, or maybe not vaguely, there's something kind of problematic, right, about this sort of conceptually, yeah, in terms of, you know, the scar forcing a character to hide away, right? Mm-hmm. But I think there's something very, I think what's really powerful about that is, like, the, obviously within the context, it doesn't take much work to see this, but, like, within the context of this particular trope in books that are historical, especially, we are looking at, like, the mark of patriarchy, right?
Yes.
Like, right. And the way that in a lot of these cases, like war, we've talked before on the podcast about how, like, war is patriarchy kind of, like, distilled
or supercharged or whatever.
Yeah. And so, like, in many cases, like, coming home from war, having been through something, you know, then makes a hero a recluse. And there is only one way to win him, and that, or to, I don't know if I would use the word win, like, there's only one way to really, like, woo him and to have him, like, find love. And that is to go and, like, sit inside the kennel with the animal, right? Until he is willing to offer himself, like, and his, like, crack open his frozen heart. It's so good. It's so good.
Yeah.
So there are two people who I think are in historicals where, like, this is their whole kink. Like, I actually don't think either of them have ever. Well, all right. I think one of them basically has only ever written Beauty and the Beast, like, yeah, in different ways.
I love that.
And, like, it talk about a core story, and that I'll start there. And that is Elizabeth Hoyt.
Yes, I would agree with that. And sometimes the beast is more beastly than others, right?
Yeah. Oh, for
especially
sure.
Especially if we're and talking, like, Maiden Lane, yeah.
It's not always, like, Beauty and the Beast, but it is kind of always Beauty and the Beast. And so there is a real sense with her that, like, the heroines are goodness and light and the heroes are darkness and trauma, right? Like, and in order for love to happen, it's, like, almost morality chain in some. It's definitely, like, scarred hero in a castle in some.
Yes.
And it's, but it's always, like, he's been brutalized by life.
Yes. Yeah.
And she often has not been. Like, she is often, in, like, the most classic of ways,
thrown to the wolves.
Yes. Agree.
And listen, do I love it? I do. I do.
Yeah, me too. Yeah.
So if you have never read Elizabeth Hoyt, you are in for a treat. There is, I mean, it is just like book after book after book of them. Just first of all, when I first stumbled upon Elizabeth Hoyt, and I stumbled upon her debut, I think when she wrote her debut, The Raven Prince, we've talked about it on the podcast before. It is also a Beauty and the Beast retelling. But the, like, these books were sexier than any historicals, any really romances I had ever read. Like, so if you're looking for a historical that really is sexy, she's a good choice. And I love that first series, but the second series, which is The Legend of the Four Soldiers, is, I mean, this is all about war as well. It's about soldiers returning from war, and about how they come to, you know, be able to live having seen and done and experienced what they have, right? The third book in that series is To Beguile a Beast. It's The Blue One. Everyone.
Okay. I love
it. And Alistair is a full-on recluse. He lives in a castle, and he is not seen. He does not come out. He is like fully Beauty and the Beast coded. And she arrives, the heroine Helen arrives to his Scottish castle because somebody has put a job opening in the paper or whatever for a housekeeper. And she is on the run from her own sort of demons. And she gets to this house and he's like, get the hell out. And she's like, no, I need this. Like, I need this job. I need to hide. She also needs to hide. So she goes to this house.
Oh, I love that.
And they are just circling each other. Like rabid animals. Like, it's so intense. Elizabeth writes these books that feel like every emotion is just dialed up to a million. And it's great.
I have never had a bad time with an Elizabeth Hoyt book. Let me put it that way.
No, yeah. And it's funny because you used to hear about her all the time. And now she hasn't written in a few years. But like, listen, if you're new here, right. Elizabeth is a really solid place to go. And you've got like 25 books to choose from.
Who else do you think has like a Beauty and the Beast?
Oh, are we still? It's going to be all me right now.
I think it makes it easier to just kind of like make sense out of it. Yeah.
Okay. The other person I have to name check here is Mary Balog. Listen, these books are less kind of adventure-y fantasy historicals and much more like quiet, emotional turmoil romances. Mm-hmm. Like these books are, you know, really steeped in the history of the Napoleonic Wars. These heroes have come back traumatized by war. In many cases, they have PTSD. In many cases, they have some kind of wound or like long-lasting injury from war. The one that I think about kind of on the regular is Lord Carew's Bride. So Lord Carew has come back. This is like an ancient one. This is like real, real deep cut. Like,
I love it.
Was a signet regency.
Oh yeah, that is a deep cut. Yeah.
It's on my shelf, and I like every once in a while I pick it up and I just like read through the end. So this is the main character is Samantha, and she is so it's like almost Austinian the way that it's set the setup. So she's like taking a walk, and she meets this man who is on, like, she's like wandered onto the property of the Marquis of Carew, and she meets him, and he's like friendly, but like she thinks that he's just like a gardener.
Yeah.
And so like she comes back again and again, and they like have this friendship, but like she's, you know, a woman of means and a titled lady, and she like has done this. And so they fall in love in the kind of small,
the small space of this cast of this, you know, estate where he is basically in hiding. And then she ends up in London for a season, and this, and he, and like, there's another person, there's an, like an old lover is back in town. And she, you know, is searching for somebody to like kind of save her. And out of the blue comes this, comes Lord Caro, who has come down from his castle to prove that he is worthy of her. Ugh. It's really lovely. It's a quiet one. I mean, it's almost Friends to Lovers in a sense, but there is a real like sacrificing his the like bruised ego that has kept him away from society for her. That is like really the giveaway. Like that's really the business in at the end of these books. Listen, Mary Balog writes
Beauty and Beast a whole romance. Lot. Oh, and she's such a beautiful writer.
Yes.
Right?
Yes. Yes. And then I want to talk about, since we're still on it, I want to talk about Amelie Howard's The Beast of Bezek, which is probably, listen, this is probably the closest thing. If you really just want the Disney movie, but make it historical, like make it, this is the book for you. He literally like breaks plates and like, prowls around, yells at servants, and so Nathaniel is his name, but he has been betrothed. The twist here is he's been betrothed to like some little wisp of a thing, and when the whisper comes down to that woman, to the woman who he's betrothed to's older sister Astrid like basically Katniss Everdeen's this man and is like, I volunteer as tribute, and she goes to him and she's basically like, you should marry me instead. And he's like, why? And she's like, because I'm hot. Like, she basically is like, well, maybe we should just, like, let's just make out. And then, like, she sort of makes, like, very bad decisions, poor Astrid. But then, like, ends up in this, like, married to a beast living in his castle, having to, like, control him. It's great. It's a real fun book that you will all really enjoy. It's one of the best, I think, modern historical takes on
Beauty and the Beast. Got it.
What else do I got? I have talked about this a million times, so I'm not going to rehash it, but Brearley, which is a male World War II retelling, that's by Astor Glenn Gray. This is, imagine if Belle's father like wandered onto the grounds of the Beast's castle, picked a rose for his daughter, and then immediately was face down with a dragon, like the beast in this case is a dragon, and then they like fall in love. Belle's dad and the beast fall in love.
I love it.
I mean, I can't complain.
No, not at all.
All right, so those are historicals.
So I think we should move to like kind of
paranormal
romanticy, as the kids say.
Mm-hmm. Well, your favorite IAD.
My favorite IAD is Demon from the Dark, is and your favorite, you could argue, like Wicked Abyss.
Wicked Abyss is great.
Right? So I do think like paranormal, of course, which is just what we used to call it back in the old day, romanticy, I guess. It lends itself, of course, so well to this trope, right? So I was going to start by talking really quick about Demon from the Dark, which is Malcolm is a literal demon living alone, for the most part, on a planet where, because of his, like, he just avoids everyone. He just, like, stays in his own realm. And Caro is a witch who is essentially, this is in the Torture Island run of the series, gets sent there and she is supposed to essentially like bring him back, right? Like the bad guys running Torture Island need Malcolm for some reason. And he is just basically like, I don't know, this woman fell into my lap and probably I should eat her out. That's my first line of attack.
I don't know what to do. I'll just
eat. And really, there's no going down from there. I think one of the reasons I really loved this book is that it starts off with like her going to like essentially like the Beast Castle, right? This cave or whatever. Yeah. And he's like hoarding water. And then they get sent to, it flips, right? And they get sent to Torture Island, which she is like, get me out of here. And he's like, no, this world is amazing. Water is falling from the sky, right? Like, and there's, and I'm sort of fascinated by, I think like what I think is the brilliance of that book is sort of taking them out of the Beast Castle and putting them somewhere he thinks is awesome and she thinks is terrible, mm-hmm. right? And then having her like kind of have to try and convince him like there's better places even than this. So yeah, that's definitely one of my favorite. Do you want to talk about Wicked Abyss or no? Well, you just mentioned it.
I mean, Wicked Abyss, he's basically the devil. He's the king of hell. Yeah. And she's like a perfect fairy. Like she's beautiful and perfect in all ways. And now the twist on that is that he steals her to hell because they have, you know, because of romance reasons, they have been chasing each other for millennia.
Right.
And she doesn't remember, but he, like, they have been fated mates for millennia. Yeah. And he steals her basically to her cast, to his castle, which is the realm of all hells. And then they dance around each other. There is also, he basically at one point is like, I don't know what to do. Let's just eat her out.
Yeah.
Terrific.
The best plan.
No notes. And then, but what ends up happening with that, I mean, this has like a great moment. I feel like Cressley really like, I mean, this, it's one of the later books in IED, but you could read it. You don't have to have read the whole series. You can really start there. But what's really remarkable about this is like, Cressley really is like cooking with so much gas by the time she gets to this book that like she's just taking every single risk. There's such fearlessness in it. And there are a lot of things that happen like in the end of that book that just feel powerful. Like the heroine just getting so much power over and over and over again. And ultimately like the hero having to choose to live in the world like Lord Caro's bride, right? Like, there comes a point in all of these books where at the end, like if you are writing a Beauty and the Beast retelling.
Yes.
At the end, he has to choose the world.
Yes.
Yeah. Because that's the growth, right? Like he has to come out of his reclusive space.
Right.
And choose to live so that he is worthy of her in the world. Right. And like, take the risk, right? Which is what love is. Love is a risk for all of us. I think there are few books that do that really as well as Wicked Abyss.
Yeah. Well, and I think back to Demon from the Dark for a minute. Caro has a younger cousin or niece or something that she's watching, a little baby witch. And Malcolm is like, I know the job right now, and it is to protect the two of you. And Caro's like, no, not here. And he's like, yes, here. Right? And so, like, going into the world, it gets complicated by the fact that everything Caro is telling him is essentially, like, really against what he feels is right when it comes to, like, having a young, right?
Yeah.
And so I thought that was really interesting. So,
Well, it's interesting, too. Like, I think Cressley plays with Beauty and the Beast throughout the whole series. Because, and then there's always that sort of underlying, and I'm fascinated by this in general in books. I think this happens a lot in modern retellings of, not contemporary, but modern romance retellings of Beauty and the Beast, where the question is like, well, which one is the beast?
Mm.
Right? Like, who is the mm-hmm. beast in this story? Yeah. Right. And it's really a compelling, I think Cressley like rides that line really well in a lot of those IAD books. Like, the question there can be like, is Caro the Beast? Like, and that is a fundamental question in the plot of that book. Like, massive betrayal in that book. And the question is like, has Caro been the Beast all along?
So yeah, I think it's a great, I think it's a great example of it.
This week's episode of Fated Mates is sponsored by Hannah Murray, author of Sharing Shane.
Listen, you know Hannah Murray, you're going to get all of the good romantic angst and all of the super spice you want. So in this one, we have Veronica, who is all booked to go away for a week to Bermuda with her charming boyfriend. Instead, she finds him charming the neighbor. And so she's pretty mad. She needs someone else to go with her on this double occupancy requirement kind of resort vacation. And so what happens is she ends up taking Shane, who's a friend of a friend. And Shane is like too busy to take a vacation, but his boyfriend is like kind of like, maybe we need a break. And so he ends up, poor guy, in a beautiful beachside bungalow with a very beautiful Veronica and only one bed. Shane is grumpy and bearded, and Veronica is really ready to jump back into being single by jumping on Shane. But I think the thing is like, there's all of this complex stuff happening, because sure, Shane is bisexual and polyamorous, but like, what happens when they get back home? Can this vacation fling turn into a future?
This one's perfect for you if you've been looking for a poly romance, if you love an only one bed, if you love it when people make their exes jealous with the sexy times with hot, you know, men and others. And if you love a vacation romance, you can get it in print or ebook. And if your podcast app supports it, you can click on the chapter title right now to buy the book. Thanks to Hannah Murray for sponsoring this week's episode.
So maybe this is your other one. Is it Lover Awakened? Lover Zadist and Bella?
Lover Zadist and Bella, yes.
Okay.
I mean, that's a classic, right?
Yeah. And part of the reason I wanted to bring it up, everybody, is, well, I'll save that. I'll save the why I wanted to bring it up in a minute. But Zadist has been one of the Black Dagger Brotherhood vampires. And he is, for the first couple of books of the series, just like, this terrifying, even to his brothers, a terrifying mystery. He had essentially been enslaved as a blood slave and sexually assaulted and abused for, you know, millennia or whatever, you know, however long, because he's an immortal. And he has a twin brother, Fury, who is like kind of this beautiful, happy, right guy. And so everyone, and I think the brilliance of that is like, people know what Zadis started out as. Mm. And so his fall from grace, like the way he was destroyed, is made plain to them every single day. Mm. And so he's this like terrifying monster, right? And Bella is a female vampire who in the previous book, like, is a neighbor to Mary and brings Mary in, and they have this really like raw like interaction where like he scares the shit out of her, right? And does it on purpose, but yet she is so drawn to him. And he is, of course, like, I'm dirty, bad, wrong because I was abused, right? He's a victim of sexual abuse. And so I cannot possibly be good for her because she is pure good, right? Right. And so this story is one that, you know, you're just really like, how's it going to work out?
Well, and also like through the first two books, there's just this like constant sense of like, he's dangerous. Like he's a live wire. Like we don't know what he might do. Right. Yes. And then it's worth reading the first three books of the Black Dagger Brotherhood in order, like starting and moving forward to this book, because I think the rescue of Bella, so Bella gets like,
right,
in the second book, she is abducted by the baddies.
Right. Right.
And she's like, I don't know. Is she? I feel like she's kept in a hole. I can't remember, but she's like,
it's something tortured
in a hole. Like, listen, check all your content. This is all very like, if you have a content warning concerns, you should check them before you go into this. But she's kidnapped. She's being held in a hole, and he saves her.
Yes.
He's the one who rescues her.
Yeah.
And then he is the only person she will let near him. Near her, rather.
Right.
So he has no choice. Now, listen, vampires have to feed. And in the context of this series, have to feed. It's sexual and they have to feed from the opposite. Well, at least in these books, they have to feed from the opposite sex.
Right.
That all shifts later in the series. But what's fascinating about this is like she won't be near men. So he is her only option.
Yeah.
And it is such a clever way of pushing these two together.
This is also like, you know how you have scenes that are just like so when a female vampire then goes into essentially a heat cycle, and it's called the kneading, because you need to fuck, right? You need to. And in fact, if you are an unmated woman about to go into the cycle, they will like put you into essentially like a medical coma until it's over, because you literally, it's so painful, you can't live through it. And the scene where her kneading hits is like.
The men like smell it and then they go feral?
Yeah, it impacts everybody around them. Essentially, it's like a heat cycle. So
when they're all in the kitchen.
Yes. And then like if you have a mate, even though it's like secondhand smoke. It's only like secondhand pheromones, right?
But also so like it's exhausting for the men. Like it's so they're like
I'm gonna lose 100 pounds like taking care of this business.
I mean, it is really for all of like the seriousness of these books, like this whole conceit is so insane. It's great.
But I actually am on record. I don't love Zeta Stimbella. He's like a little too mean for me, right? But this scene is fucking amazing. And I have read it a million times.
Yeah.
So here's the reason I brought it up, though, everybody. You have heard me say that J.R. Ward has like managed to reboot the series. And I wasn't sure exactly how it was going to happen, but in the last book, which was called Lassiter, she reboots it so that at the end, there is a time jump forward, like 20 or 30 years. And you're not quite sure what happened. And like some of them are still alive and some of them aren't. And like the Black Dagger Brotherhood is essentially like broken up or whatever. And there's all these like breadcrumbs about what she's thinking. But the next book, which is coming out, I think soon, this spring maybe, is called The Beloved. And it is Zeta's daughter is the heroine. And can you imagine that man with some other some vampire sniffing around his vampire daughter? And listen, I don't love that really. Like, I'm always like, women are their own. Men do not own them. Fathers, I don't give a shit. Like, I don't really play that game. But I read this and I was like, oh, I'm down for this. I'm down for what's about to happen. So that is called The Beloved. And like I said, it is coming out soon. I don't know the exact date. Sometime this spring, I think. Okay. So,
I have another one.
Okay.
That I have talked about before, but I stand by. Marion Pereira wrote a book called The Beast Prince a million years ago. And it is really a terrific fantasy. It was romanticy before romanticy existed, truly. So it's the concept is that there is every some number, there are gods in this world, and they're brother gods, essentially. And each one controls some aspect of the world, of like nature. And so the idea is that this particular, and then each of the gods like lords over some area of what is, I think, Earth. Like, and so this particular god is the Earth god, and he can basically destroy, like he can manipulate Earth. He can make stone. He can make landslides. He can make like a volcano erupt. Like he sort of can manipulate the planet, the like earthiness of the planet. And every generation or so, he must be fed a virgin. Right.
Sure. I love it.
In order to keep him happy, because if he is not made happy, he has to, he'll like destroy the village. Like he'll destroy, you know, the world that he is lord of. So he's now living in this like kind of rock formation. He's like built himself a Elsa style castle, like up on a hill, and he lives up in there. And the heroine of this book, Katsumi, is the captain of the guard of the military of this like small outpost like community. And she volunteers to be the virgin tribute to this god this year. And she like trudges up the mountain and like walks into this stone castle, and he's just like laying like a cat, like just sort of fully naked and massive in his human form, waiting to be like honored. And she thinks she's gonna die, but she's going to experience what the French call the little death.
She
there a deep cut.
I'm so a mad deep at romance you right cut. Now. It's fine.
So and then of course you discover that like in actual fact he is not all is not as it seems with this like prince god, and he has lost his ability to like manipulate the earth, and his brothers, if they find out, are gonna fuck him up. So
amazing.
It's really fun. It is actually, I don't know, maybe it's not that fun. It's really fascinating. It is dark and yeah. like serious in a way that, you know, can really hit if that's what you're interested in reading. I love it. So I will say this. Marianne reissued, this book was published by Samhain a million trillion years ago, and she reissued it a year or so back, and it is now dedicated to me because I have like basically been talking about it went out of print and I've been talking about this book forever, and now it's back in print, and she said, and I don't know her, but she said it's because I kept asking for it. So
self-publishing is the gift that keeps on giving sometimes, you know, because then people just be like, yeah, I'm putting it up there.
This week's episode of Faded Mates is brought to you by Toby Carter, author of The Bottom Line.
Stella Daniels, our heroine, is very, very loyal to her family. She has put her competitive finance career, which she loved, on ice and passed up a very big promotion to help her elderly grandfather manage his struggling funeral home. Here's the problem. This funeral home is right now in danger of closing. And so Stella's only option is to inject fast cash into this funeral home, which means she can't help grandpa during the day. She's got to go back to her old finance job and make a bunch of money to help that way. She gets there and she's back on the promotion track, except Jen. As always, it's romance offices. There is a very hot, very grumpy, very full of himself financial guy who's also on the same track to a promotion, and they're in competition. Jameson, though, he's there because he's just moved to the States to take care of his mom, and his father, it happens to own the firm. But they can't let anyone know because Nepo babies are a no-no. So anyway, Jameson and Stella are at each other's throats. They are fighting for the job. They are sabotaging each other for the job. And both of them have a lot on the line. But also, they can't keep their hands off each other.
Of course not. So this contemporary rivals to lovers romance is for you if you like brother's ex-girlfriend, complicated family dynamics, and steamy swim lessons. Yeah. It also is a book that really explores issues around men's mental health. So if you've been looking for that, this would be a great book for you. And if your podcast app supports it, you can look down and click right now to be taken to buy the book. Thank you to Toby Carter for sponsoring this week's episode.
Okay. I have
two more to talk about.
Me too.
Perfect. Okay. I'm going to talk about Entreat Me by Grace Draven. And Grace Draven is, I don't know if she's still, she writes to me like fantasy romance, right? We're not talking romanticy. Like, correct, this is fantasy. And she is one of those authors that I think people really love because I think she's just very good at the job. And in this case, Entreat Me, and I really enjoyed reading this. Like, this is a book I kind of was like, I want to read something new, right? So I was like kind of Googling, like, you know, romance, Beauty and the Beast romance. And I was like, okay, this one sounds good. And people really like Grace Draven, so I'm going to try it. And I was not disappointed. And so the book is, it starts off with essentially two sisters, and their father is just like a real wastrel. He has gambled away the family's money, or they're not quite sure where the money is going, and it takes them a while to figure out. And her younger sister, the heroine's name is like Llewellyn. I don't, it's like a strange spelling, everybody. Sorry, yeah. It's probably Welsh. It's Welsh.
Llewellyn.
Mm-hmm. Louvain.
Oh, I don't know.
See? Okay. I'm just going to call her Lou. Lou is a widow. And she moved back home. Her younger sister, though, is Helen, like, kind of renowned for her beauty.
Name is Destiny.
That is not, I don't remember the younger sister's name, but it's something. Anyway, the younger sister is just so beautiful. And the man that her dad owes this money to, essentially, you find out pretty soon, has been like buying up his debt and encouraging him to get in more debt and to encouraging him to make even more risky, you know, kind of gambles with his money, because what he really wants is the younger sister. Now, meanwhile, the younger sister has like a new man. And so Lou's just like, you're not going to get my sister. And he's like, I am going to get your sister because there's no other way out of this. And you have, you know, 10 days or whatever. Next morning, Lou wakes up and her sister has run off with this guy. And the sister leaves a note that says, like, I know you're going to be really mad at me, but I don't think the sister quite knows what's happening. Like, I think it's like a coincidence. She's like, I'm going to run off with him. And the note is enchanted so that Lou can find them because it's enchanted to his home. Now, the thing is that you're like kind of wondering is, he's going back, you know, the home he's going back to has appeared in the prologue, where a warlord, you know, I was super interested in this, named Ballard. His son has just been born. His wife is dying, and he goes in to see her, and it's clear that there's no love lost between them, and she curses him, like, on her deathbed. And he's kind of like, what's she going to do? Lol. Right. And his man of, you know, his servant is kind of like, I wouldn't really be so cavalier if I were you. And so it's 300 years later and you're like, wait, why does the younger sister's, you know, beau have the same name as the son, the 300 year warlord? Like, what's going on? Well, the curse essentially was the Beauty and the Beast curse. So there is this magic that is seeping into the castle, and everyone in there is sort of stuck in time. And the son can, like, leave and try and, like, find cures or whatever, but he's called back when the magic is, like, up, essentially. And so that's the reason they went back. He felt this pull to, like, return home. And so Lou comes along, and, you know, the son is like, Dad, I just really like this girl. And he's kind of like, okay, well, we'll pay off the debt and you can, like, spend the winter trying to get to know her, but, you know, that sister's probably going to try and talk you out of it. Like, it's so rich, like, the whole setup. It's not at all silly. Like, it really is, like, playing into, like, the Beauty and the Beast tropes, but, like, imagining essentially that what we can figure out is, like, the curse is going to kill Ballard and then move on to the sun. And so finding a way to break this curse is really important to everybody. And, like, the roses are, like, poisonous and, like, climbing up the walls and giving everybody nightmares. And
Oh, it's great. I really loved reading it and I was super compelled. Like, you know, when you put a book down and you have to go do something and then all you think about is like getting back to the book and finding out what happens next.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I felt reading intrigued me. It was awesome.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's great. It's really good.
So I also feel like we have to just nod to the Ice Planet Barbarians and all alien romance. Like, I feel like there's definitely human heroine, alien hero, all has just like a slight vibe of Beauty and the Beast going on.
All of it. I agree. So, yeah.
There's that. I do have two contemporaries.
I have one.
All right. I want to start with, let's talk about Alexa Riley, who we never talk about for some reason. A long time ago, Alexa Riley was the Jessica Kane of their time. So I want to talk. Have you read Snow and Mistletoe, Jen?
I have not.
Which is about an audiobook narrator.
I have not. I have a favorite Alexa Riley, but that's not it.
I can guess which one is yours, you perv.
You can't guess. It's like such a weird one.
There are
one.
12 million of them.
Exactly. I'm like, you can't guess. You kidding me? You can't guess someone's favorite Alexa Riley, everybody.
No, it impossible.
Can't be done. There's
impossible work. But Snow and Mistletoe is really fun. So the main character, it's a Christmas novella. Her name is Noelle, obviously.
Of course it is.
So she is an audiobook narrator who has been hired by this like audiobook producer. I think his name is Alex. And he spends a lot of time, like basically the moment he hires her, he's like obsessed with her voice. Alex has like a terrible injury from a past accident and lives as a recluse in a cabin on a mountain somewhere. So they do all of their work remotely, but over the last like however long that they've been working together, he has like basically become obsessed with her voice. He's obsessed with her. He thinks she's amazing, but he would never ever dream of telling her because he is not good enough for her, Jen. He just isn't.
Of course he isn't.
And they speak every day on the phone and she is like just crushing on him so hard. Luckily, so some very serious audiobook emergencies happen on Christmas Eve.
Of course. Audiobook emergencies.
On Christmas Eve.
Listen, romance is unmatched.
The purest of romance reasons. There's an audiobook emergency. She has to turn in her final files on Christmas Eve. Like, it's a very serious thing. And then would you believe, Jen, the power goes out?
Oh, what a shame.
And so, or the internet goes down, something happens, and she can't get her files to him digitally. So what is a girl to do but go out in the snow and find her reclusive box's mountain cabin so she can deliver the files on time and save audiobook emergency and also get eaten out?
Obviously. Okay. You said mountain cabin. I just want to mention that Kate Canterbury has a book called The Bell and the Beard, which I started, but like didn't get far enough to recommend. But I know people really love it, which is he's like an arborist who lives literally in a mountain cabin. And the old lady next door died 2 years ago. And like he had to sort of like no one ever appeared. And, you know, like there was a storm and he had to put up like stuff on the window because like no one was taking care of the cabin. And then he looks out one day and there's a woman with a crowbar breaking into the cabin and she's like, yeah, it's mine, that was my aunt, whoever. And I was like, oh, this seems like a promising beginning, but that's as far as I got. That's The Bell and the Beard by Kate Canterbury. But the other one I want to talk about was an ad last week, Moonlit Thorns by P. Rain.
Nice.
Which is a Beauty and the Beast retelling. Annabelle is just out of college, so pretty young, 22, and she's gone home to visit family in a small town called like Magnolia Springs or something like that. And she has a twin brother named Luke in their home, and their father has died and their mom is really struggling with depression, like can't get out of bed type stuff. And she comes home one day from like just like literally being on a run or something and finds like essentially romance law, a lien on the front of the house that says you have 10 days to vacate your, you know, ancestral home. And she's like, what? How could this be?
Sure.
Dad would have never, right? well, dad did, in fact, ever. Apparently had some gambling problems and went to the four billionaire brothers who live next door. One of whom, by the way, this is great. Asher is the hero of this one. And, you know, she goes and talks to Asher, and Asher's like, well, fine, but you have to live here. And she, like, works as a maid for a while, and then eventually his assistant, and all of the things you would expect from Beauty and the Beast telling. But the part I really loved, is unparalleled, is one of the brothers is Sid. Like, they're just like, it's Sid and Asher, and I can't remember the other two. And at one point, he introduces himself to her, and his name is Obsidian. I am Obsidian Voss. And I was like, oh, listen, I love this fucking genre more than anyone in the universe except you.
Anybody who says that we're not amazing is wrong.
Sid, my name is Obsidian. Short for Obsidian.
A very common baby name.
Sure. If you are raising billionaire grumpy brothers.
I mean, if you're living in a house with your three billionaire brothers, yeah.
Sure. So anyway, it's great. So Annabelle, of course, is Belle, right? And one of the things I like that's kind of cute is she's allowed to go home every Saturday night. Like, essentially, she lives there, but Saturday night she can go home. But Saturday nights is also the night that, like, something mysterious happens.
Yeah, these four brothers have, sure, like, an orgy or whatever happens up in there.
So here's what it is. It's really interesting. She notices about Asher, who is not scarred or, you know, beastly at all. He's, of course, devastatingly handsome. But he has on his hand a tattoo of a bear. So I'll just leave that there. I'll just leave that there, everybody.
Just as like a little morsel. Dangle a little morsel.
A little tiny morsel. So.
Got it.
Those are my Beauty and the Beast.
Well, I think we should talk about one last one. I want to talk about Jasmine Guillory's By the Book.
There you go.
Which is part of the Disney new adult line that we've talked about before. Zoraida Cordova wrote Kiss the Girl, which is a contemporary romance retelling of The Little Mermaid. Mm-hmm. And By the Book is Jasmine's take on Beauty and the Beast. Now, the way that these work is they're contemporary, and so they are based on the movies themselves, right, not the right original
right
stuff. So
this is like Disney fic, right?
Yeah, exactly. So By the Book, Isabel is like in her early 20s and is working in publishing. And she is desperate to get that promotion, like to like get noticed in her publishing house. And, she overhears her boss talking about this like high profile, like recluse of an author who lives in Southern California and has just like not delivered. They've been like waiting for this manuscript forever and they haven't gotten it. And she's like, I know how I am going to show initiative and get seen by my boss and everybody else at this publishing house. I'm going to go and like get this guy to write his manuscript.
Sure.
Good luck to you, Isabel. and she gets there, and essentially, like, what it's really lovely, like, what ends up happening is she becomes his muse, basically. Like, he's had writer's block, like, he's not able to deliver, to write, but she is there, and suddenly, like, he's unlocked. His creativity is unlocked. Mm. And they fall in love. Now, listen, these books are no spice, closed door. Yeah. But Jasmine writes a romance beautifully. And if this is something that you think that you'd be interested in, or if you have, what I do with these books, I always recommend them to like young people. Like if you're a young person in your life,
right,
who loves a rom-com or like loves romance, but maybe isn't quite ready for, you know, right, the Alexa Riley of it all. This is maybe a sort of slow entry into romance.
Yes. Perfect. Perfect.
So that is Jasmine Guillory's By the Book.
Amazing.
All right. Well, what a fun trope. If you have an interstitial idea for us, or you love a trope and we have not talked about it or haven't talked about it in a while, you can always tell us about it, what you would like to hear us talk about, and we will do the job for you, maybe. I'm Sarah McLean. I am here with my friend Jen Prokop. We are Fated Mates. You can tell us all about your favorite tropes or your favorite Beauty and the Beast books at on Twitter at Faded Mates or on Instagram at Faded Mates Pod. We're also at Blue Sky and on Threads. And the content in all of these places is different because we're all running different stuff. So enjoy yourselves, everyone. If you really wish you could have more of us every month, you can join us on Patreon at patreon.com/fadedmates. What else?
That's it, Sarah. That's what we know.
Thanks to everybody who came out on Saturday night for Faded Mates Live. It was a real blast and we had a great time.
All right, everybody. See you next time.